My goodness gracious, I didn't know you had that story in you. Oh, gracious me. Well, that's one I'd never heard. You got so frustrated with the game that you just threw him in the puddle. Wouldn't you like to know if you ever use those clubs? Maybe you sold them. You just never know. Well, anyway, I was talking about my dad and how he liked to watch golf. It was back during the days of black and white only television. And I don't know if it was rolling or not. I was Dad's remote control. And just the set that we had during that time, I think it was one that we could never keep that keep the vertical hold good on that set. It was weak components, not tubes so much as other components that affected the tube's performance. And so you could put a brand new tube in that, which he was capable of doing, you know, reading the number on a tube and going to the drugstore. They used to have them in drugstores, and popping one in the set. He was careful enough about, you know, all the high voltages inside the back of that. I guess he knew about that. And it would act all right for a few days, but then it would get worn out too quick because of other things that were bad. And it would start rolling again. So he'd say, "Larry, go over and stop that thing from rolling." TV to switch it this way and that. And I would sit there turning that little neural knob back and forth this way and that to keep that pitcher centered for my dad. I'll never forget that time of my life. Anyhow. So I reckon I've had a good day. I'm proud to have been here today. I'm glad I lived this long. And I hope there's another one tomorrow for anybody that's like me and wants to have a good day tomorrow. Gary, I wish you a good day, and everybody listening, a good day. And I've done what I wanted to do. I wanted to extend the time here. We're now a little past 10 o'clock. And I hope there are others that want to check in. The check-in numbers have been down, I understand, and we just can't have that. So everybody gets, even if you arrive a little late, you got a little extra time tonight. Check in now, won't you? This is KK4JBQ. Back to you, Gary.
Hey, Larry. Well, yeah. You know, these folks that have never been a remote control for their parents when it comes to the TV set, you know, I'm sure your dad and you're probably your mom, too. Go over there and turn that to channel so-and-so. You flip it over and it would, you know, the horizontal hole would be rolling. You'd have to sit there and adjust that a little bit. Or I don't know if you had a rabbit ears or an outside antenna. But we had rabbit ears there for a little while before we got an outside antenna. And Daddy would say, "The picture's fuzzy, you know, adjust them rabbit ears." And you'd grab one side of the antenna and pull it this way, you know, push it down or pull it up. You know, the folks that have never been a remote control for their parents' TV, they don't know what they were missing. Well, we had a lot of fun doing it anyway. But, Larry, you take care. Enjoyed it, as always. Look forward to doing it again. And I don't tell that tale about my golf clubs a whole lot. I shouldn't have told it on the air tonight, really, because I don't want people to know how bad a temper I used to have. But it has calmed down tremendously over the years. You know, I don't get flying hot as quickly as I used to, which is a good thing, and the Lord's blessed me in that respect. But anyway, Larry, you and Miss Donna have a great evening tonight and a wonderful day tomorrow. You enjoyed it, and we look forward to doing it again real soon. 73 there, young man. We have additional check-ins all the way through the alphabet for Blue Ridge 2-meter net. Call KI4DOS.
Echo Delta Whiskey, in at Brevard. No comments, no traffic, I'm monitoring.
You might want to ask you a couple of questions about a couple of people and write you about some of the hunting thing, and maybe if Larry can stay a little later, talk to them about the whole radio.
For Echo Delta Whiskey, are you addressing that to me, over?
Telling that control's there. Like I said, I was just telling that control that Gary's there. I got a couple of questions for him too, but I was telling that control. KI4LZI.
KI4LZI, Mr. Andy, you had some comments, and Larry, are you going to be by the radio for a little bit after I close the net out?
Here, KK4JBQ.
Andy, there you are. Larry will be here after I get through the net. And it's your turn on the stop there, young man.
Well, the guy is, I think, did you recognize Ed in there? He come in there after me. Don't forget to recognize him.
But it or not, Andy, but I did know he was in there. N4EDW, Mr. Ed up there in Brevard. We appreciate you being with us tonight. Hope you are doing well. Now it's your turn, Andy. Go ahead.
What I was going to say, you was talking about getting out and hunting. Of course, you'd have to be up here to really hear it well. That last week of October, first week of November, the 156 megahertz range, when it comes to hunters, during that period of time up here, it's active all over back off up here. They're using Simplex, so you'd have to have a good antenna to pick it up. That'd be like if we was talking Simplex. You ain't gonna get it just on anything, but during that period of time up here, they go wild back off up in the mountains up in here on the last week in October and first week in November with their dogs and they're chasing after the bears up here. And the other two things, I want to know the status on W4DJW and K4UOZ. Back to you.
The bear hunters, gosh, that's been going on up there around the horse pasture and up in there for, I don't know how long. there for a while, they were using 2 meters, down in the 2-meter band. And we got a hold of some of them that, catch them as they came out of the woods and told them, look, you can't be using that. And, that hadn't been that many years ago. You know, I've been a ham now for 20 years, and that's happening, back then, even 20 years ago. So if they've gone up to the 156 megahertz, they're probably up there in some of them GMRS type radios and things. But that's been going on for a long, long time. And it'll probably continue to go, not a bad idea for hunters to have a way to communicate with their co-partners or, the co-hunters in case something happens, especially if they get, I used to go hunting with two or three other guys, and I'd be in one stand, and the next one, the closest one to me would be over a half a mile away, and then, we just spread ourselves out. So had one of the guys' tree stand broke one morning, and we had to go get him out of a tree. He was hanging upside down in his foot climber, his seat part of his stand broke, and he fell over and caught his leg in his foot climber, and he was hanging there by his leg, so we got him down. But had we not had radios and stuff then, we might not have got to him in time. But anyway, that's the answer to that question. And K4UOZ, Ray Elrod. I have not heard from him in a good long while. The last time I talked with him, he was living over here in Easley in an assisted living facility. Went over to see him, and he was in a one of those motorized wheelchairs. And he was in good spirits, and he was doing good at that point. I have not talked to him since then. I've tried to call him, and he's changed his phone number. So I guess the only way to find out about him is to go over there and see if he's still at the assisted living place.
K-I-4-L-Z-I, I just wonder how J.W. got in the shape that he's in right now. He was questioning me why he didn't get on the repeater, but it's probably, at the time, we thought he was on the other side of Paris Mountain, but I didn't know where he was at exactly. Where he's at, I guess he just can't do it with an HT, and he might be a silent key. We don't know. That's what I was asking about on that, and you can go ahead and give me the lowdown if Dave don't mind on him. And as far as the what I was talking about, you was talking about hunting earlier. Anybody here, all these newer radios will receive out the ham band. But you got to have a good antenna, because they're operating simplex. In the 156 megahertz or the red dot, blue dot frequencies. 150, 160, 250, one that I've heard them up here doing too.
Echo Delta Whiskey.
Well, that's true, Andy, and I don't mind people using the radios if they've got a license, especially if they've got a license. And then, when I was hunting back years ago, I had a headset. Didn't have much range on it. It was very QRP. It was about a half a watt, but it was on 6 meters, or just right out of 6 meters, in the 53 megahertz band. And I used it, and the guys I hunted with had them as well, and they had like, three or four channels in there that you could switch, frequencies that you could switch to. But they were sold in hunting good stores and other places just for that purpose. So I guess they were legal as far as that goes. As far as Dave Watson, W4DJW, goes, talked with him a week or so ago, a couple of weeks ago. And he was sounded like he was in really, really good spirits. Said he would not know anything definite until he went back to the doctor, and he went back to the doctor the 23rd of this month. So just kind of hanging in there and waiting until he goes back to the doctor and gets all the results and that sort of thing, and we'll go from there on Dave.
Tom, around the frequency of 49.860 that you was talking about with those headsets. Because I remember years ago, Radio Shack used to sell a lot of license-free stuff around 49.860 frequency range. Well, I was just wondering about that. And, Larry, I'll ask you, I'll talk to you about the radio here when it gets done. K-I-4-L-Z, I back to you, and you and Ed can talk.
Fixing to go back to Ed. I didn't want to leave him out and see what he might have to say. But appreciate you coming in and asking about Ray and Ray Elrod and Dave Watson. And appreciate you letting us know about the hunters up there in that area on the different frequencies that they use Simplex. We have additional check-ins all the way through the alphabet for Blue Ridge 2-meter net. Call KI4DOS. Have you, Ed? I didn't mean to cut you off there, young man. Do you want to make a comment?
DW, a comment about the radios. I have a friend who does bear hunting, and he was telling me about a new radio he just got, a Yaesu portable, goes in his truck. They're operating at 148 plus, or actually on 148, and I got curious about his having a license. It turns out he's in the marine frequencies, and the requirements for a license to operate in the marine frequencies are very liberal unless you are on a big boat with people. If you're basically operating on land or in a rowboat, you do not need a license. Over.
The marine frequencies are a little more liberal when it comes to those radios, especially if they're used inland. I try to stay away from that. I've talked to several folks, maritime mobile and that sort of thing, and they got those radios for a reason. And if something happens to them out there on the water, we don't want to interfere with them in case they need help.
They're like they are. The boat has to be over a certain length, over a certain tonnage, and has so many passengers on it. I've forgotten exactly the details because I was real curious. But apparently, if you're operating on land, you can always say, I'm getting ready to go out. I don't even know if you have to do that, but they're operating those. His radio was something like 80 watts, over.
Well, 80 watts over the water is high power, big time. But you don't need to run that much power out there unless you're way, way out and that sort of thing. I don't have a marine radio, but I don't really need one. Used to be some hams in this area. One of them was a friend of mine. It was a neighbor of Jerry's mom and dad for a time, and he always turned his on when he went out on the lake. He had a bad heart, and he wanted to make sure he could get in touch with somebody if he had a heart attack out there on the water. So they do serve a good purpose there, Ed.
Yes, for bear hunting, they're operating Simplex, so I doubt they're interfering with many people, and nobody's going to really bother them. Usually they're 2 or 3 miles apart, and of course, line of sight starts playing. He had it in, and I was going to look at the SWR on his. We could not get the SWR adjusted on his antenna. His hood where the antenna is fiberglass, and I'm wondering if the lack of a ground has something to do with the SWR on it. Or?
I would think so, yes. If you take just for grins and giggles, you took a mag mount antenna and tried to put it on a piece of fiberglass, it wouldn't work too well. But if you take a pie plate, a tin pie plate or one of these metal cooking sheets that the ladies use, and stick it on that or on top of a filing cabinet or something of that nature, they work real good. So I would think that the fiberglass hood would add a little, or fiberglass that it was mounted to would have some effect on it. It's got to have a little bit of a counterpoise someplace.
The antenna was attached to the fender, which I believe is metal, but we could never get the SWR adjusted for his frequency. I don't know why. And we played with it for a while. I tried a mag mount with a quarter wave 2-meter one time. Put it on top of my refrigerator. The whole refrigerator started to vibrate. Over.
Well, that is, I've never put one on top of a refrigerator. But I've got a two drawer, file cabinet over here beside me in the ham shack. And I've got two or three mag mount antennas, and I have put a 2 meter mobile mag mount over there and set it on top just to have another radio in here when I was there, had my shack tore apart, and it worked real well. I mean, it had its limitations, of course. Certain repeaters I couldn't hit. I couldn't hit Greenwood, or I couldn't hit Mount Mitchell. It was inside the house. But other than that, it seemed to work pretty good.
I was just talking about it worked very well on the automobile, but when I put it on a refrigerator, it did not seem to like it. Well, I've enjoyed the comments that people have been making about the different stuff, but I've got to get back to some stuff here, but we'll talk to you again probably tomorrow.
I appreciate you coming in there and talking with us just briefly there. You enjoyed it. You take care and get your things done and all your projects finished up. You take care, and we'll talk to you a little bit later. 73 there, my friend. Any other check-ins or any other comments for the Blue Ridge 2-meter net, call KI-4-DOS.
KI-4-DOS. Out KI-4-WCA. Michael in Asheville, North Carolina. Over.
KI-4-DOS in the Blue Ridge 2-meter net. Would like to say good evening to KI-4-WCA. That's Mr. Michael up there in Asheville, North Carolina. Appreciate you being with us tonight, Michael. Hope you are doing well. You don't happen to know KO4JKV, Mr. Duncan, up there in Asheville, do you?
It doesn't ring a bell, but I'm horribly dyslexic, so I might know him really well and just don't know his call, which would be typical for me. Over.
I understand completely there, young man. And Asheville is a big place. We talked to several of the folks up to live in Asheville to check in with us down here. Randy, KI-4VLW, checks in with us. And his wife, Linda, KJ-4CRL. And then Duncan, KO-4JKV, lives up there. And he calls the net on Monday nights down here at 9 o'clock. So if you're about a radio on a Monday, check in with Duncan, and he'll be calling the net. But do appreciate you taking the time to check in with us this evening. I hope you have a wonderful weekend. Do we have any other check-ins or any other comments for the Blue Ridge 2-meter net? Call KI-4DOS.
4DOS. NXY David and my wife Marie AF4SX down here Southern Greenville County Possum Kingdom. Check us in and out. Good evening, everybody on the net.
4DOS in the Blue Ridge 2-meter net. I'd like to say good evening, KF4NXY. That's Mr. David and his sweet bride, AF4SX. That's Miss Marie. They're down there in Southern Greenville County, down there around Possum Kingdom. Appreciate y'all being with us tonight, David. Tell Miss Marie we said hello. Hope y'all are doing well. Any other check-ins all the way through the alphabet or any other comments, call KI-4DOS. We'll about wrap it up this evening. Appreciate all you fine folks out there in Radio Land that checked in with me tonight. Y'all come back again tomorrow night, and Mr. Patrick, KO4HKX, will be calling. And now I will submit my net report, and then we'll finish closing the net out. Got a grand total of 54 tonight. Appreciate each and every one of you out there in Radio Land. Y'all come back again tomorrow night. Mr. Patrick will be calling. Give him a good dose of Rider's Cramp. This is KI-4DOS, now securing the Blue Ridge 2-meter net. With our thanks for all those folks checked in with us, we will now return the repeater to normal amateur use. 73, good night. God bless. This is KI-4DOS clear.
JB2, KI-4LCI.
KI.
AK4JBQ here.
That June and I was for zero baiting the signal to the middle of it. All of those mid-30s silver tones had that June and I in them too. And all those from then, whether they, as they called them, entertainment receivers or even ham gear of the time, were notoriously bad vacuum tube stuff about drifting.
See, I have a great respect for the vacuum tube era of radio. While it was, well, it had its day, you might say. And the only thing about that was, gee whiz, you got to be awfully careful when you stuck your hand in the back of the set. I had fear in me about sticking my hands in it, especially if the power was connected. And I've learned since then that that was a fine respect to have. I never had to change anything about that radio. It worked fine until, well, I guess I got old enough and went on to other things, bicycles or BB guns or something else took up my interest. But I'll never forget that time that I would go to sleep with one arm reached over to keep it on station. It drifted quite a lot. No matter what the station was or what the power of the station was or how far away or near it was, it drifted. You know, there are folks that make a really fine hobby of refurbishing, and you can do that if you keep respect, the first rule. you know, getting them all cleaned up, that requires other skills. You know, this was a wooden cabinet, and so if it was a little beat up on the outside, it made a lot of difference. Aesthetics, you know, made a lot of difference to give the outside a little clean up as well. Yeah, I spent some time trying to make them look good, even though I didn't know a lot about the circuitry. I've learned more about that. Never lost the respect, though. KK4JBQ.
Well, see, yeah, there's something that does that. That's how I got that silver tone over on the other side of the room repaired. Radio Days, it's up in Ohio. They still sell parts for them, but not long after I got that silver tone repaired, they quit reconditioning them. They're only selling parts now, but there is different people out that does that, and that's how I got that repaired over there. But I heard you talk about that, but that's in different makes for series. That there was an Aircraft receiver. I found that when I had that redone. Was built by Aircraft for Sears. Sears used all kinds of different radio manufacturers out from this book I got here from 30 to 40. Different manufacturers, that was for Aircraft, and also, and of course, this was just AM back in the day in the 30s. What's now on 162.55 and such as that back in the old days was down on AM down there, because this book I got here talks about some of the mid-30s Sears receivers having a spot on it where you could tune the weather in on.
I remember something, Andy. Oh, goodness, probably 3 years or so ago now, QST, and I know you received that magazine, QST ran a series of, Oh, I think they started with a power supply. Now, all this is tube now. And new parts, build it on a piece of board or whatever, you know. But they had, well, the author of this, he did have a podcast at the time also, and you could follow along the building of the power supply, the receiver. I think it was a transmitter too. But you built each one of the components on a separate board, you know, a pine board, a piece of pine wood. And the articles in QST were all in the, I think maybe it was four or five issues. It was spread across four or five issues. And that was really interesting because they were using components that you can still get. Everything from, you know, the small point-to-point components, resistors, capacitors, and such as that, as well as tubes and tube sockets and such. It's all still available. And I think the first issue that started the series, it appeared, the power supply anyway, the first thing built, appeared on the cover of QST. It was all put together by Bob Heil, who, you may have heard of Heil Microphones, and he ran that company. He's been a silent key now for about a year. Anyhow, that's another thing that you brought to mind. People still like to work with tubes. The only caution you have to keep, like rule number one in your face all the time, is that there's high voltage in those sets. Some peculiarities make them particularly dangerous if you're poking around without knowledge. I'm talking 600 volts, you know. At 600 volts, that you across the room. And if you're not dead, you have a tremendous respect after that. KK4JVQ.
Well, I don't know everything, but I know enough to be careful in there, just like I had radio days do that, you know. I know of their existence, and it was even before my time, to a certain degree, and you were talking about tube testers. I remember back in the late 70s at the Radio Shack out here at Easley. In the late 70s, as of that time, they still had tube testers out there. But, you know, late 70s has even been a long time now.
Tube testers used to be at every drugstore. And I remember packing them up. You know, they're made of glass, the tubes are, and most of them have a glass enclosure, very thin glass. Anyway, I remember wrapping them up in toilet tissue because paper towels hadn't come out yet. This is a while ago. Anyway, so I'd wrap them up in toilet tissue and put them in a shoebox. And I wasn't the only one that did that. I think I picked that little thing up from somebody else I saw testing once before I did, and I thought, well, that's a mighty fine idea. I wouldn't want one of those things to crack. Tubes back in that day were, you know, every bit of $3. But that $3 was, I don't know what that'd be in today's money. You know, $45, I don't know. Anyway, it was too expensive for a little boy like me at the time to replace a tube, so I was judicious and respectful, even when they were pulled out of their socket and taken to the drugstore. Oh, and those machines were complicated. You know, you had to set this thing, that knob, that switch, you know, get it all right, check yourself, make sure you got it right three times before you turn the switch to test it. Yeah, that day is gone. Although, I think I noticed there's a YouTube channel called Mr. Carlson's Lab. This guy works on vintage equipment all the time. Everything from radios to oscilloscopes and receivers of all kinds, transmitters too. Anyway, he's got a really good channel, Mr. Carlson's Lab. He once, I don't recall much about the that episode, only that he was refurbishing a tube tester, one that he had there. You know, if you're going to work on these things, you can't find them at drugstores anymore. So he refurbished one, and when you take the front cover or the top plate off of a tube tester, it is a nest of wires in there. Nest of wires, switches, all different things that you got to be respectful of. It was complicated enough for me to see the top side of this thing and to work it. The bottom side was another deal. I never had one apart like that. But he did, and he's very, very thorough. And it worked perfectly when he was done, of course. Yeah. Well, anyhow, I have a few tube-type radios. That Ward airline that I've spoken to you about before was one of them. And I never did much work on that. Just, you know, kind of took a little soap and water and cleaned the outside of the case. Let it dry real good before I plugged it in again, of course. And but then I had one that I got it at a flea market someplace. It was a Detrola. And Detrola, I think it was. Detrola. It was a minor brand, you know. But the thing had such a pretty case. It was bent wood. You know, they would steam bend the wood on the cabinet. So one side was squared off, and the other side had this beautiful bend in the wood. And I was just really attracted to that. I didn't care if the thing worked. But after a while of just looking at it, I took the back off. And I looked at it and I said, wow, that don't look too complicated. It was an All-American 5, which means that it's a very common layout with five tubes. And I took that thing apart. I did find a tube tester. And I took it apart, cleaned the all the dust and trash out of it, you know. And everything looked okay. Didn't look like it had ever been monkeyed with. You know, you got to be careful of that. Other people have been there before you. And contacts made good. And don't you know, it worked. You know, I put a little long wire antenna on the thing. Had antenna binding posts on the back. And that thing worked. And I gave that to my dad. I don't know that he ever used it. And it passed on to my sister when she inherited the house and all the contents. I don't know I don't know if it's still in the world. KK4, JBQ.
4LZI, well, like I told you before, this and here belonged to my great aunt. And they didn't have electricity up there where they used it at, and it was originally designed for batteries. And this catalog I got shows you the battery was kind of a rectangle-type shape, but for the battery to last a year, you only play it 4 hours max. That's the only downsize the tube gear. It'll eat a power source up in no time. That one right there, over there, it's got five tubes in it and one in the, what they call a power shift, which all it is a power supply. It's got a tube in it.
That brings to mind another radio that I ran across. Don't know how I came into owning that radio, but it had a battery in it. Portable, of course. Long before transistors and a reasonable size battery in it, it had one of those brick type batteries in it, and I never got that to work, but I don't know what the vintage of that was, or even who manufactured it. Yeah, I hadn't thought of that radio in many, many years. Well, what else can we talk about, Andy?
Tells the guy, George Hall, right now, I can't remember his call sign, save my neck. He's over there in Spartanburg. He's mostly just an HF guy. W4BWW, I think's his call sign. He located that old power shifter for me, for that radio, because the batteries, the last time I've checked on that, the last time the batteries was available for that radio was 1962. And there ain't been any batteries made for since then. And he located that for me, and I had it and the power shifter already done by then. And of course, at that time, a lot of those waves also would have showed you this. Around 1700 kilohertz, round up in there, the police band was up, located in those areas too. And you was talking about putting up something down there where you could at least receive on that gear you got down there. You can use WWV or CHU Canada, you might say, somewhat to kind of the test with to see how well you can receive on it, or how well you get those on their different frequencies.
That's interesting. I think if I had a radio with a battery in it, and what you're calling a power chip, I would do the necessary research to find out. Well, the simplest thing would be to read the battery cover, you know, what the voltage and what the output, as far as amperage is concerned, on the battery. And you can make up a battery supply with rechargeable cells these days. I think it's one that's used quite a lot. An 18650. You can put those things together in just about any arrangement that you want to and get enough voltage and then a step-down transformer, if you will, to step the voltage down. If that could give you enough amperage, and I think those batteries would, then you'd have a you'd have a power supply, and these batteries could be fit right into most radio cases. You'd have a power supply that you could recharge. Thing is, unless you worked a little longer on it and had a means by which to switch it from output to recharge, you know, you could do that and not have to take the batteries out each time. But if you didn't do that, you could just take the batteries out and recharge them in a battery charger. Those things work real well. I've got a few radios that work on one of those batteries. I can't remember now what the voltage is on those things. I think 7.5 volts, maybe. Anyway, it takes a little math and a little soldering skill, of course. But you can do some fabulous stuff. with, if you really just want to update the power supply, that's what we're talking about. And otherwise, make the thing run, you know. I've known people, I wouldn't recommend this, but they just take an old radio like that with a nice pretty case, you know, and gut it. And put in something like a Bluetooth module in there. So it would receive and transmit whatever you, you know, from your computer. Let's say you play something on your computer and by Bluetooth send it over to the radio. People do all kinds of stuff, you know. What I wouldn't imagine to do, to tell you the truth, but yeah, it's kind of fun. This hobby is fun in a thousand ways. KK4 JBQ.
For hell's a yeah. No, I wouldn't do that with that silver tongue, but something that you just mentioned that, there was on RadioBoulevard.com where someone had done something similar to what you're talking about. It's in the part on RadioBoulevard.com where it was talking about entertainment radios, and it was, so. But one of those there, someone had done something similar to what you're talking about. You ever get the time and the chance, you can say, like I've told you before, I'm sure I've said it many times, but at RadioBoulevard.com, anything from the very beginning to the end of vacuum tubes, entertainment radios, amateur radios, commercial stuff, they go into every detail that there is about it. And you'll see on some of that stuff, as you've pointed out about the drift, read some of those things on some of that old gear, whether it's receive or transmit. Notoriously bad about the drift issue, but you ever get something up down there with your 857D or your other one down there, WWV and CHU Canada continuously transmits, continuously. And they got a multitude of frequencies. They can tune it to, some of them are better for daytime and some are better for nighttime. And taking, since you're talking about odds are, you won't be able to do nothing proper but receive down there without causing all kinds of interference. But something we can at least receive on. But that's exactly what I would do for tuning even a receive antenna, you know. It's continuously transmitting. And I'm going to have to take Anson here in 2 or 3 minutes, so I ain't going to be able to stay in here long unless you're going to be in here later. JK4. Oh, boy, now how am I forgetting your call? JBQ, KI4LZI.
Forget my call, Andy. I have not forgotten my call. I forgot Donna's call. Must have been a week or so ago. It just flew out of my head like a little bird, and I could not remember past the first character. It just was a blank, just a big old blank hole. I could, you know, recite it right now, but memory is a funny thing. There must have been something down in my brain cells that was conflicting with it. I'll never know. But anyhow, Andy, I'll let you go and take your medicine, and it's been fine talking to you. You made me remember a few things I had not thought of in years. Anyhow, get yourself some good rest tonight. Tomorrow is another good day, we all hope. KK4 JBQ, I'll be clear with you, Andy. 7-3.